Good morning. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. I am Matt Jordan here on this Wednesday morning. And on a Wednesday, we have the Wildcat Extension District in with us. We have Jesse Gilmore and Wendy Powell this morning. How are you guys this morning?
Great. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah. Doing pretty good. Glad it's warming up.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure as the garden guy, you're excited for growing season. So I know you guys have got some composting stuff to talk about, but you've also have some events as well. So we'll let you talk about the events, and then we can get into the compost.
Yeah, great. So we are working on a Powerful Tools for Caregivers educational series. It's designed to help reduce stress, improve self-confidence, communicate things better, balance life, increase ability to make tough decisions, and locate helpful resources for caregivers. So these classes will be held on Tuesdays, May 3rd through June 7th from 4 to 5:30 at the SEK Assistive Technology office in Parsons. And folks can register online or by calling 620-378-2167. And of course, this information is on our Facebook page and our website, or if anybody wants to call any of our extension offices to get that information. So it's a 6-week course, and it's only $5. And so you actually get some hands-on tools to help you as a caregiver.
And for the horticulture side of things, our K-State Garden Hour webinar series continues today with our April class on pollinators and keeping plants flowering throughout the entire growing season so that pollinators always have a good food source. You can find more information about that on our website or on the Horticulture and Natural Resources webpage for K-State's website. We also have a volunteer conference coming up at the Parsons Research and Extension Center on April 14th. So if you've ever been interested in learning about the different volunteer opportunities that are affiliated with Extension, that could be Master Gardeners, that could be Master Food Volunteers, that could be 4-H related, you can sign up for that on our website too, and you would come, and it's, I think, 2 hours where you can learn about the different volunteer opportunities if you wanted to know more information. And I believe it's free, although the website will have more info.
All right, well, I know you guys got a lot to talk about compost wise and when I think compost, I automatically go to like apple rinds and apple and orange like peels and stuff, but I never think about the crappier side of compost. So Wendy, I'll let you get into that.
Yeah, great. I love it, Matt. So I just came back from a 2-week training on animal composting, and we use some manure in that. So like feedlot cleanouts or winter feeding site cleanout. So we talk a lot about how those sites should be cleaned up regularly. That can help prevent stable fly populations. Lots of other benefits of cleaning those sites. But then once you have that piled up with your skid loader or whatever, what do you do with it then? Well, a lot of folks will just put that in a manure spreader and just land apply that to a pasture or whatnot. And that's a great way to get that product back into some sort of usefulness. But I just want to plant this idea in folks' mind. If we are able to compost that, so think about letting those piles sit for a little bit longer and monitor them routinely, then we can actually make the nutrients from that manure more stable, and it would be more useful as a fertilizer. So fertilizer prices right now are insane. And so one way that we can maybe get around some of that expense and work on our farm input costs would be to use a, forgive me, sustainable resource there in our stockpiles. So just leaving the pile as it is for a short amount of time, and I say short as in like 2 weeks, monitor those with a compost thermometer. And a compost thermometer is about a 3-foot stem, so definitely not your typical meat thermometer you would use for cooking. monitor those temperatures. And when the temperature starts going down, well, they should get up to 130 or so. And then whenever it starts going back down, then that's when it's time to turn that and create the aeration so that that nitrogen can turn into a more stable product. Those microbes in there can use those to make new cells. And you turn it, and then you let it sit for a couple more weeks, a month maybe. And then whenever you land apply that product, then you're actually applying something that's not going to volatilize immediately. And it's going to be a product that's going to spread easier because you don't have chunks of hay or whatnot binding everything up. So it's more of an earthy type product. It's smoother and it will spread more smoothly along the pasture. So there's lots of ways that you can use that manure if you've got animal mortalities in your operation. I'd love to visit with you about composting those carcasses and using this manure to help stimulate that compost as well. And I know Jesse has lots to talk about with composting as well, so I'll let him chime in a little bit here too.
Sure. So most of the composting that I talk about has to do with food waste, like you mentioned, garden debris that you clean up at the end of the season in the fall. There are two different types of composting that we discuss on the horticulture side of things. There's hot composting, which is a lot like Wendy said, you need to make sure that your pile gets up to a good temperature. And there's also cold composting, which is you just throw everything in a pile, don't bother about turning it, and it goes a lot slower because the heat is what speeds up the decomposition. But it's also a lot less work, and I shouldn't probably be admitting this, but I do cold composting at my house in Pittsburgh. I do not really bother with turning the pile as much as I should in order to get the decomp. But Wendy, I did have a question for you when it comes to composting. Are there any health concerns that would have to do with not turning manure? I know that spreading manure on vegetables, when you do it as an organic matter source, you would want to make sure that it's composted so that there's not potential contamination issues. Are there any issues like that with the compost pile itself?
Yeah, so that's certainly one of the things that we want to address. If there's any disease in the manure, so E. coli comes to mind. Coccidiosis is another disease that can be spread that doesn't really affect humans as much, but it could affect like backyard chicken flocks, things like that. So when those piles get up to the temperature, the high temperature, 130 or so, then those bacteria or viruses or whatever that might be detrimental in those piles will actually be broken down.
So you actually want the bacteria dying from the high heat?
The bad bacteria, the E. coli, the coccidiosis, things like that, yes.
Gotcha. But the composting bacteria, the ones that are doing the breakdown of the organic matter, those are, I believe the term is thermophilic. They can handle those higher temperatures.
Yes. Yeah. Gotcha. And that's their job. That's why they were put here on Earth, would be to break down those other bacteria, the bad bacteria, as well as the organic compounds that need to be broke down to make that more into an earthy material to be used.
Gotcha. Yeah. I know when people apply manure to like vegetable gardens, almost all of the time, if you find like manure in a hardware store, which you definitely don't need to do that, especially if you've got a livestock production site, the manure that you buy from garden centers and hardware stores is 99% of the time going to be composted already. So it's not necessarily something you would need to worry about if you were buying them from an outside source. Like I said, a lot of the time you don't really need to worry about buying it from an outside source if you've got your own livestock.
Right. Yeah. And if folks are buying it from a garden center, they can tell that it's not quite composted. So a lot of it will be on pallets in plastic bags. And if in between those the bags that are stacked, if it's hot in there, then that compost is not quite done. Mm-hmm. So just use caution whenever you're using that in your gardens.
Is it possible to do cold composting with manure like it is with garden debris or food waste?
Yeah, that's a really good question that I have been discussing a lot with my dad. So the piles will eventually break down on their own without being turned, but the value of the hot composting is what comes into play when we talk about the nutrient use. So
gotcha.
The cold composting would be an avenue to take if you're just wanting to get rid of the matter. If you're wanting to actually use it, then you're going to want to lean more towards the hot composting.
And one other quick question that I've had with manure is salt content. Over applying manure has led to some salt issues in some gardens that I've dealt with. How do you control that? And is that something that you really need to worry about with manure?
Well,
in general?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't really looked at the salt content very much on these manure composts, but I will say having a nutrient analysis is key to using this material. You want to make for sure you know exactly how much phosphorus and potassium is in these piles before you throw that on a pasture or a field or a garden, because a lot of times they can be really, really high in potassium, which is great if you need potassium, but you don't want to apply the amount of compost you need to reach your nitrogen goals. And then all of a sudden you realize you have potassium goal overachieved.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that there's ways to mitigate salt content.
Gotcha.
So just test for salinity.
And those nutrient levels are affected by what the animals eat, right?
Yeah.
So what goes in comes out.
Sure. And definitely it's going to be affected by like the hay that's being fed or how much hay is out there, you know, the stocking rate, how many animals are we talking and that's accumulated for this pile, things like that. So definitely the ingredients in the compost pile will affect the outcome.
All right, well, we are about to the top of the hour, and we'll talk more about compost when we come back in the 8 o'clock hour. I actually have a question when we come back in the 8 o'clock hour about the types of manure that you can use. But we'll go ahead and take a break. When we come back, 8 o'clock, we'll have Fox News, local news, and then we'll be back with the Wildcat Extension District here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Back here on the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Wednesday in the 8 o'clock hour. We've got the Extension District back in here. We're talking compost, and if you were listening in the 7 o'clock hour, I teased a question for Wendy as we were talking about compost specifically with manure. And does it matter the animal? Like, is there one particular animal that produces a better manure for compost, or can you use anything? Like, I hear you hear chicken, you know, fertilizer quite used quite often, but cattle, sheep, pigs, does it matter? You know, is there ones to avoid, ones to that, you know, are better, that are preferred?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And at the end of the day, it's all pretty crappy. So whenever you mix it with, like, when we talk about poultry litter, oftentimes it's mixed with bedding. So wood chips or sawdust or whatever it is that the poultry were bedded on. And so that's what makes it a more thorough product, that chicken litter, because it has the manure and the carbon source in it. Whenever we're talking about a feedlot or a winter feeding site cleanout, like where you've fed big round bales, then that's going to be a kind of a thorough product with the manure and the extra hay product. So you've got your carbon source from the hay that's left over and has been wasted. So whenever you talk about pigs, I'm not super familiar with how like the bigger operations bed their pigs down, but like backyard hog operations will have their pigs bedded. And so anytime that's mixed with any sort of bedding that manure is, then it's going to be a good product. So really it's more determined by what the animal eats and what's the manure mixed with rather than the type of animal it comes from.
Now, you mentioned hay. Is that straw as well, or is there particular hays that are better like alfalfa or just your standard hay?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when we're talking about just composting the manure pile itself, any type of hay goes. But whenever we're talking about formal sites where you are trying to do something quickly, you're on a timeline to get rid of a pile, or like mortality composting, then we're going to put down an absorbent layer. And most of the time that's going to be like chopped straw or 2 or 3 year old round bales that are ground up. If somebody can figure out how to shred cardboard and not make it fly away, that would be a really excellent carbon source to soak up liquids at the bottom of a pile. So really any type of carbon source that's dry that can absorb liquids is ideal.
All right. And I know, Jesse, you want to talk about the food side of composting as well as some of the garden aspects of composting as well.
Yep. So obviously you can compost anything that's organic or, you know, was alive at one point. A lot of times when I'm talking about composting, it will be on food waste. So any food scraps or things you need to throw out in the kitchen, not anything. There are some things you don't want to add to a compost pile, but the United States wastes about 108 billion pounds of food every year, which is over $400 billion worth of food and about 40% of the total food bought in the United States. So what we want to do is we want to try and get as much of that food waste out of the landfills and back into your garden or landscape to help your plants that you're trying to grow better. So you've got a compost pile, and that needs to be built a certain way. And when I teach kids this, and kids actually really like learning about this for some reason, it's not something I ever thought they would, I like calling it a compost cake. Because usually we're putting it into a smaller bag. The size of compost piles does matter. It should only be about 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet max. Because as Wendy said in the previous session, you want that compost pile getting hot. The heat is what spurs on most of the decomposition of your pile. And if it's smaller than 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet, or 3 feet cubed, your center of the compost pile is not really going to get hot enough to have sufficient decay. And if it's bigger than a 3 foot cube, your outsides are not going to have sufficient decomposition because they can't get the heat. Your compost pile will get hot, but it's going to be very uneven decomposition. So a 3 foot cube is pretty ideal. Your decomposers are almost always going to be bacteria. All of the kids, when I teach them, they say worms are, you know, decomposers, and they're right. They are present, but bacteria is going to do a lot of the heavy lifting as far as breakdown goes. So you want to make sure that your compost pile stays not wet, not dripping wet, but it needs sufficient moisture in order to break down and for the bacteria to go through that metabolism. It will need air, and oftentimes that involves turning. If you've just got a pile sitting in a box or in a lot of times people use cinder block walls around a compost pile and just put the pile in there. You will need to turn it manually. Could be with a shovel, could be with some kind of machinery. For compost bins that you can buy at hardware stores, often they will come with a rotating element to it where you can spin it with a handle. That is much, much easier. They will also need air, which the bacteria do. Otherwise, they go through anaerobic fermentation. And when they ferment the organic matter, that's when it's going to start to smell. So if you have a smelly compost pile, it needs more air. There are certain things that you should definitely not be composting from your kitchen. Obviously, we want to compost as much as possible, but typically that will be limited to fruits and vegetables, and that's nice because lettuce is the single most wasted food in the country. So you can use quite a bit of food waste. You don't want to ferment meat Because that can invite critters to your compost pile, raccoons, possums, etc. And if you live in a city, you don't necessarily want that. Dairy is also not specifically something you want to put in your compost pile, because it will go through that fermentation process regardless of if it gets air or not, and that will cause the compost pile to smell. Eggshells are okay as far as dairy goes. You do not want to ferment, or you do not want to compost whole eggs. And then meat. Wait, I just said meat. Meat, dairy, oils. Oils will not break down in a manner that will be good for your garden once you have compost to apply. So you break down the compost. It kind of depends on how hot it is and how hot it gets. The center of the compost piles can get pretty hot, up to 160 degrees. So it's not something that you would want to put your hand in. Usually, if you're out near it, you will feel heat radiating off of it normally. But after the breakdown, you should get a rich brown organic matter that you can then apply to your garden or vegetable garden or, you know, garden beds. A lot of people think compost, at least the garden waste compost variety, adds a lot of nutrients to the soil. That's actually not the case. The breakdown will add a small amount of nutrients, but compost of this type is more for fixing physical problems with your soil. So if you have too much clay in your soil, it will push apart clay particles so that there's more space in between them. That allows roots from whatever you're trying to grow to penetrate clay more easily. It also allows water to filter through the soil faster, so you don't have to worry about standing water in sections of your garden that have higher clay. It is also used to hold more water in dry conditions because of the organic matter in the soil. If you get a soil test done, specifically for package 2 for our soil samples, it will give you the organic matter percentage of the soil sample that you submitted. If it's above 3%, you're pretty much not going to be getting any added nutrient benefits. I had a soil sample from someone who the soil sample was at 16% organic matter, which is incredibly high. She did mention she used a lot of compost. So compost is good for physical properties above 3%, but for nutrients, you're going to likely need to use a fertilizer source if you're low. But it is a good way to help your plants grow better. Typically, we talk about composting in the fall because you got a lot of leaves to pick up, and decomposers, especially bacterial decomposers, need a certain level of nutrients. So you want three parts brown organic matter, like fallen leaves, which supply carbon, to one part wet organic matter or green organic matter. That could be food waste. That could be grass clippings. We talk a lot about grass clippings as a compost source, too. Could be weeds. For the brown organic matter, if you're doing fall cleanup on perennials like daylilies, the shoots above ground will die off at the end of the year. You can cut those off at ground level and they'll resprout next year. And you can put whatever you cut off into your compost pile too, and that will also compost. But that will be part of the brown organic matter instead of the green. Any food waste you can provide, that will be green.
Cool. How much compost is there possibility of applying too much compost to a garden?
Yeah, so for compost, it kind of depends on whether or not you're going to till it in or dig it into the soil, or if it's just laying on top of the soil. Compost is really good as a mulch, and when we talk about mulching, there are general guidelines to follow with how deep you want your mulch to be. If you're composting veggies, you don't want it any more than an inch deep. And you'll hit that pretty quick, whether it's with mulch or with compost. Roots need to breathe, just like people do. So they need oxygen to be able to get into the soil easily. And if you're piling mulch on top of mulch on top of mulch, you run the risk of smothering any plants that you're applying it to. If you're incorporating it into the soil, like I said, there's not a ton of benefit to nutrients above 3%, but you do still get those physical properties that are good for, you know, helping plants grow better, the roots being able to grow deeper if they need to, and also the water holding capacity of your soil. So if your soil is really bad, and it can run the gambit depending on where you are in southeast Kansas, northeast Oklahoma. Texture is definitely one thing to keep an eye on. There is no harm to adding more compost, and especially if you're making it yourself, I would not say there's any problems with adding more and more compost. You do need to keep in mind that if you are using mushroom compost, which is a common compost source, you do need to keep an eye on salt levels. And that's kind of why I asked you about salt earlier, is that mushroom compost has a higher salt content, and adding too much of that to the soil can be an issue. But if you're buying compost from a garden center or from a hardware store, that's what I was trying to say, you won't get much benefit. So you need to weigh the physical benefits of improving your soil versus the financial cost of buying compost. If you're making your own compost, go wild. Some cities in our area will have municipal compost piles. I know we've got one in Pittsburgh, where I live. I add leaves to that all the time. I would hesitate to recommend people take compost from that pile for two reasons. One, it's huge. It is probably about 20 feet tall with leaves. And, you know, in the center of the pile, you're going to get the heat you need. But the outer sides of the pile aren't breaking down. So it's a good example of that size, that oversized compost pile that you really want to avoid when making compost. The second reason is that anyone can put anything in that pile. And you don't want to really compost wood unless it's like really chipped down and shredded, because the lignins in the wood take a lot longer to decay. That does not stop people from putting, you know, wood in our municipal compost pile, and for the most part, when I go to the compost pile, it's pretty good. Most people will compost their leaves and grass clippings, but occasionally pieces of trash and wood make their way in. You can't control what people apply to, like, their yard. If they compost grass clippings with herbicide on them, that could end up in your garden. So, not a huge issue, because a lot of those chemicals actually break down a lot quicker than you would think, especially in the presence of bacteria, which are doing decomp. But you don't really want to run the risk of killing off your plants if, for some reason, someone takes composted materials with herbicide on them or insecticides. You don't get as much control as if you had your own compost pile. So I would definitely recommend people at least look into either creating their own compost pile or having a bin to put their compost in.
I have a couple of questions before, if you guys are close to wrapping up here, but one, and I think either one of you can answer it, or maybe both of you can answer it. Is there a time of the year that is best to compost? You mentioned the fall, but does it change with what you're using? And is manure different than, you know, food or grass clippings?
So I like the fall because you have so much compostable material already there. And, you know, that's when people are thinking about garden cleanup. You can compost at any time. And a lot of people compost in the winter. And I'm sure that right now, at least in my yard, I've still got a ton of leaves to clean up that I didn't get to last fall. Kind of lazy on that side. But no, as far as food scraps go, you're always going to have food scraps from the kitchen because people are always eating. So if you can find the brown organic material that's already died and would supply the carbon, any time for composting is fine as far as food waste and yard garden waste goes.
And for manure or mortality composting, any time of year is fine. Those piles are so large that the outside weather temperature only affects the first few inches. And so the bacteria on the inside that's doing the heavy lifting, like Jesse has talked about, is pretty well protected on the inside of those piles. And that's why we have to make for sure that those compost piles are the correct size for what we're trying to break down. So anybody that's wanting to do this, I'd love to chat with them to discuss dimensions and composting materials too. So anybody is welcome to call me at the Altamont Extension office, 620-784-5337.
Yeah, and they can reach me at the Girard office, 620-724-8233.
All right, last question. Is there anything that ruins a compost that would make it unusable, or would you just need to, you know, trim out what's not good? Or because you mentioned the things that can happen, fermenting and the smell and stuff, but would anything ruin it where you wouldn't be able to use it, or would you just have to start over?
As far as like on-farm composting, like I'm talking about, it would be really difficult to truly ruin it. A lot of times, actually, I can't really think of any problems that can't be fixed without turning or adding water or adding more carbon. So if something does go wrong, you just reassess and go again.
Yeah, and for garden waste, you don't want to compost pet waste. That can add pathogens to your compost pile that you really don't want to be applying to a vegetable garden. But other than that, there's really nothing that...
Oil?
Oh, yeah, oils. I did mention oils earlier. Those won't break down. They're not necessarily going to ruin the compost, but they can make it a little messier than people, I think, would want to deal with. So grease or other kitchen oils you would want to avoid. But other than that, no, as long as you avoid dairy, meat, and the oils and pet waste, you can add pretty much anything garden-related to the compost pile. I guess one final thing I should mention before we go. You can compost weeds from your garden into your compost pile, but if you are not making sure that it gets hot enough, the seeds will survive and will probably germinate it wherever you put them. So it is important to stick with hot composting if you're going to add weeds to the pile, or if you just wanted to go with cold composting, avoid adding weeds so you're not accidentally spreading their seeds for them.
All right, and for those of that weren't here at the start at the 7:40, remind the listeners of those events you guys talked about.
Yeah. Powerful Tools for Caregivers. It's a program that's going to help reduce stress, improve self-confidence, communicate feelings better. All of those important things for caregivers. Those classes are going to be held on Tuesdays, May 3rd through June 7th from 4 to 5:30 at the Parsons SEK Assisted Technology Office. And that's a $5 course that's going to last for 6 weeks.
And the K-State Garden Hour is today for the month of April. It is on planting a garden so that you have continuous flowers as a food source for pollinators. We also have a volunteer conference on April 14th at the Southeast Kansas Research and Extension Center in Parsons, which will tell people interested in different volunteer opportunities, be that 4-H, Master Food Volunteers, Master Gardeners, and so on. All of the different things that we do as an extension district and ways that they can get involved.
All right. Thank you guys for coming in, and we'll look forward to having two more in from the Extension District next week. You guys have a great rest of your week. You've been listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.